Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Industrial Marketer Podcast, your place for the tips, tech, trends, and tactics for industrials who care about driving leads to their companies. I am one of your hosts. My name is Joey, and I am extremely happy to be here as one of your industrial marketer advocate guides today. As always, I am joined by Nels collects lots of shells. Jensen, how are you, my friends?
I'm doing fine. Doing well.
That's good to hear. It's rainy weather where we are, and maybe in the future when you're listening to this, it's raining where you are. If not, great. So we're inside today. We're talking about industrial marketing. As always, Nels, I can't express that how excited I am that we get to get together like this, like once a week, and just kind of chat and talk about strategies and talk about things that help clients and things that help manufacturers, industrial marketers out there. Oh, it's a joy to sit here and talk with you, Nels. I hope everybody gets a joy listening to it.
I know. Who thought talking about KPIs could be so fun?
Oh, I mean, I did. I've been preaching that for years, but no one's believed me. And I say, please listen. And they don't. But now they do, because we have a podcast. I just needed to frame it in the correct way. Now, Nels and listeners, I have a confession to make. I have an apology. I tricked these. I fibbed a bit. And the title of this episode is The Most Successful Industrial Marketing Strategies. And I did that on purpose because I wanted everybody to think that we had this surplus of all these numerous strategies that are going to, you know, drive business. But I didn't. I fibbed a little, because today we're going to talk about what the best and most successful marketing strategies have in common, because we're going to play a little bit of logistics limbo this week, Nels, and we're talking about strategy, marketing strategy, and more specifically, industrial marketing strategy. And that's not 1,000 different strategies with 1,000 different people moving in 1,000 different directions. We are talking about what elements and what are the pieces that make up a strategy that can then be customized and contained for particular companies, industries, softwares, whatever it may be. So, Nels, I apologize for drawing false pretenses.
I was trying to guess what my answer was going to be. What's the most successful industrial marketing strategy? one that worked? One that had really good outcomes?
You know, the working one, the one that got us a lot of money. That was the one that was the best marketing strategy.
But honestly, though, it does speak to the what makes a good strategy, right? What are you trying to accomplish? I mean, let's start with the basic Captain Obvious here, that, you know, what is a strategy? A strategy is something that helps you meet an objective that's, you know, aligned with a goal, right?
Oh,
just kind of business definitions. I should have an MBA, you know?
Oh, you know what? I'm learning from you right now, Nels. And honestly, if you're going to be my Captain Obvious, I'll be your Lieutenant Logistics, because this is just straightforward stuff. Like the idea, and we hear it all the time. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this episode, and we were having fun with the title up front, but we get asked all the time, I was like, well, what are all the strategies that we could put into place? Or what are all the strategies that we could do? Or it's like, oh, what does our social media strategy need to be that's going to then connect with a TikTok strategy or whatever? And my head spins a little bit, because when we're talking about a marketing strategy, and Nels, you summed it up very nicely. It's what's the direction? What's the story? What are the things we're trying to accomplish for the business as a whole with the department or with the fundamentals of marketing? And so to think that there are like hundreds and dozens of all these strategies just willy-nilly floating out separate. And I think that's where a lot of people's headspace comes in, is they, well, I think I need this thing over here, and I need this other strategy over here, and I need this thing here. And Nels, you and I want to take today to kind of pull it together a little bit. It's like, let's find what that base needs to look like. What are the basic DNA building blocks of a strategy? And then how do tactics and channels and things like that actually layer on top of that, as opposed to just being added to or another, you know, strategy in the salad, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it really is kind of a hierarchy. Start with a goal, mm-hmm. right? Come up. What yeah. are your objectives? How are you going to approach it? And then how do you basically create the content and distribute it and execute it? Right.
I know. What you just laid out there, I want to kind of break that down because that's the essence of what these strategies and what a good industrial marketing strategy needs to have. Is it needs to have a handful of these elements in it. And you started with goals and objectives. So I want to start there. And I think that's a good place to start. I mean, Nels, you and I have calls with clients all the time where we're talking about, okay, well, who do you think you are? And who do you think you are? Now, like, who do you guys, you know, perceive as, you know, your value and all of these different things. And you always get to the heart of some great questions by basically saying, okay, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, what do you want to do? I know how you want to say who you are and things, and that's great. We'll get to that. But yeah, talk why it's so important for you and us as, you know, a marketing team or us as people who are telling our industrial stories for brands, why it's so important to know what those goals and objectives are at a business right. level.
So a lot of small manufacturers, legacy companies, you know, they're finely tuned operationally, but they haven't put the same continuous improvement mindset to sales and marketing, right? We know a lot of these profiles. Mm-hmm. So they think they have a reach problem. We just need to get awareness up and we'll yeah. sell more whatever. Well, they probably have a messaging issue, right? So what is it that you are trying to solve? What is the customer need? What is the prospect pain point? So you kind of can work backward from that, where here's the problem we're going to solve. And the messaging, you know, hopefully is on your website about how you go about solving that pain point. And then exactly. you can work backward with, you know, how do you distribute your solution based content? You
know, so it's
not the reach problem, right?
right.
It's the
right.
messaging problem.
Right. It's essentially, it's like, yo, you got a problem. Yo, I'll solve it. Kick it to my marketing department and the Revolve. I don't know. There's a Vanilla Ice joke in there somewhere, and I haven't quite nailed it. But one thing I do want to be clear on before we move on to the next segment of what makes a good strategy coherent and strong is I do want to give a little bit of teacher definition, the differences between goals and objectives, because as you know, I've got that streak in me. I used to teach marketing. And so I want to define everybody, because you hear goals, objectives, people throw those out and use them synonymously all the time. But when we're talking about them in our context, and especially when you and I sit around a table and try and hash this out for a client, a goal is a general thing of what we're trying to accomplish. We want to grow to be, you know, the number one distributor in Western Pennsylvania, or we want to have the largest, you know, portfolio of any blah, blah, blah. Those are the goals. The objectives are very specific, measurable tactics and actions that you're going to take to then get to those goals. So it is what Nell said, is backtracking out of, okay, so we know that we want to, as a business, grow by X percent. So in order to grow by X percent, then Department A needs to do this by this date, and Department B needs to do this by this date, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So are you backing it out by, like, that means we need to sell one additional machine every quarter, just to keep it simple. But that means what? You may need to generate 3 more qualified leads every month. That means you may need to have 10 more cold leads every week.
Exactly. Well, that is what takes us into this next element of what makes a good strategy work, is now that we know our goals and now that we know the objectives and the steps and the things that we need to take care of to get there, the approach and how we get there is the next step. So now, so let's take some of your examples. That's great. So we want to grow by X percent, or we want to, you know, we need to sell this many more machines by this date. If when you put your goals and objectives together, they're based heavily around the unit sales or the revenue gained, et cetera, then your approach section and the what you develop and what you plan and strategize out will all be based around selling a machine or getting someone to a salesman to sell a machine, et cetera, et cetera. But if let's another hypothetical would be, well, what if your objective is to grow the business, but the goal is to grow the business, but the way that you're going to approach that is by acquiring other companies in a smaller space or in a state that you don't have a footprint in. Well, then your marketing tactics become a lot heavier on the internal sales process and, you know, maybe an account-based marketing play where you're specifically targeting 7 to 8 companies and their executives with very, very targeted direct mail pieces or emails or, you know, salesman visits and things like that. So knowing what those goals and objectives are allow you to define an approach that then makes sense. I mean, Nels, I can't tell you all the times that we've been in meetings or we've been having conversations and they're like, well, write this blog post or write this thing. And you're like, yeah, but why? Like, what is it doing? Like, why am I making this thing?
And what if it works and what's next? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where all the ideas and what you were talking about earlier, the ideas and the distribution is like, okay, well, if we know that we need to sell, if our goals and objectives are to earn X more revenue and grow by this percentage, then in order to do that, we know we need to sell 500 additional machines than we sold last year. We know that for every 25 leads that we get, we can sell one machine. And then, you just kind of work the math backwards to say, okay, well, in order to do this, we need to sell, 3,600 more machines this year than we did last year. Breaking that down by month, we need to sell this many on this day. So we can do it math-wise that way. But the ideas of, oh, well, then how do we do that? And what are the best methods of getting that information out there? That's where the rest of that strategy comes together. And you can actually add in the channels and the things that we've been talking about, but they should all work together. I mean, Nelson, again, it's like that blog post, like, well, why? What does it connect to? What is it driving people towards? At what point in their marketing journey are they when they come across this thing that we have? You know, like,
sure.
That's for someone who lives in the content world like you, having a purpose for the pieces that you're creating and knowing which channels they're going to be distributed to, I can imagine that's just invaluable information and stuff you have to have to be able to get started.
Yeah. Well, it'd be really helpful for me is if you can tell me which of those sources close deals faster,
right?
if you can tell me that lead scoring, hey, we need to do more around X or Y and it works best on sources A, B, and C, then we can really help sales out. Right. So,
right.
Your marketing automation, your lead scoring, your department's going to really fuel what my department should be doing, right?
I couldn't agree more. And that's one of the things that I'm glad you mentioned, because this idea, and I mentioned it earlier, that everybody will come is like, well, we need a content strategy or we need a video strategy or a social media strategy. And while those are good conversations to have, I won't nitpick the terminology as much after this episode as before, but I do want to let people know that words are important. And when we talk about a strategy here, those channels can fit onto this in the ideas and distribution and kind of that tail end of how it all fits together. So Nels, to your point, if we're looking at everything and we know that our goals are to get a certain number of more machine sales or leads or whatever it may be, then I can then turn around and track all of that to say, well, if we send an email, we see this many results. And if we create a white paper, we see 20 times that. And if we make a video, we see 50 times conversion rates. Those types of data points are very, very valuable to you and the content teams, because then you can say, well, I need to make 5 new white papers and not worry about doing these like 10 emails that aren't going to do anything, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Sure,
giving
right.
you that focus allows you to really, really decide what strategically is going to make the best and biggest impact.
Yeah. Adjusting the input dials, a little more of this, a little less of that, you know?
Yeah. I love, like, content is, I think, is they say, you know, content is king. And I am a big advocate for that position, but the idea of always creating content and always being, you know, out there answering helpful questions is a type of layer that most strategies will need and can benefit from. So the idea of what are our biggest questions, what are our biggest needs, and then what strategically, based on the goals, objectives, approach, ideas, channels, things that we've just been talking about so far, what elements of those make sense together? So this is where I want to talk a little bit about the industrial marketing channels and how they can align, because different strategies can prioritize or use different marketing channels in different ways. So, you know, for instance, like if, now, if we're putting together a strategy that's focused completely around awareness, you know, people just need to know about either a company or a product or a service or whatever it may be. Like, what types of content pieces, or what would you expect to make if all they want to do is get the name out about who they are?
Yeah. So, you know, it could be, actually, that one's really broad. So that could include a lot of different things, but it could be success stories, though that is a little more solution based, mm-hmm. but it could be just blog posts about, you know, even anniversary stories. We've been in business for 10 years and we do X and Y, but it could be the, testimonial, the video could be, mm-hmm. you know, there's awareness. It's like you're trying to convey probably some kind of mission statement or some kind of value proposition, right? What we do, for generally speaking, we provide you with end-to-end service and we're your partner for every step along the way for the long term. Okay. So I didn't really tell you even what we do, but you know, I've told you what our promise is. Right.
And I've seen your logo now and I know it's in front of me. I saw it on like a Machining Digest or something. So I know you're related to that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I've said, you know, we're your, you know, fluids and coating provider, or that we're your widget maker, or that we have the best cutting tools, you know, in our segment.
Right.
Or, you know, something like that. Right.
I mean,
So, and awareness is just wide distribution, right? It could be social media is fair, you know, obviously it could be, you know, newsletter distribution, blog posts. So your SEO, it could be, you know, paid media that's on, you know, trade sites. There's brand awareness is a pretty big playing field.
And so we start big. And then from there, we might have a strategy that's like, we need to acquire 2 metal forming companies in the central United States. That's a very different messaging platform. That's a very different strategy. I wouldn't imagine, Nels, that you would be writing a ton of random banner ads and a ton of blog posts and a ton of social media posts about a company who's trying to acquire 2 metal fabricators in a
central United States. That's very, very segmented, very, you know, your account-based marketing approach. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's almost personalization when you get down to that.
Right. So like we're talking for that one, digital media. Well, we need like a digital sales kit with brochures and collateral and sales things that then can be used in a one-to-one conversation. Or, you know, we need to really dive into LinkedIn and follow and find every single person associated with, you know, these 2 companies and
sure, your pool of, you know, those 2 companies, you might be looking from a pool of 400 potential prospects. So, you know, that is just a very targeted, segmented play, as opposed to brand awareness is the opposite end of the spectrum, right?
So again, that's where I wanted get back to, and before we kind of move into how to measure it or why you should measure it, and then our on the shop floor segment, that is what I want to circle back to, is this on this in this idea about what makes a successful industrial marketing strategy. Knowing that you have the base very, very secure allows you to then customize the specifics.
Yeah, so, well,
it's not a one size fits all. It is, but it is a process that you should be answering the questions that we laid out up front. So goals, objectives, approach,
right.
Ideas, and how.
If you're trying to acquire a certain target, you know, there's undoubtedly some nurturing involved, right? It's not, This is not a one-off. This is going to be a series of communications where hopefully you get a little bit deeper, more involved as you go along. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be some type of I'm going to use the term gated, though that's not the right. There could be some type of mechanism for collecting information, whether it's a configurator or some calculator, right. Or do it, you know, does your company fit into this box, so to speak? So, I mean, there could
be. Calculator is a fun tool that a lot of industrials, if you have the tech know-how or if you have a connection to, you know, a digital studio that can build one. Most industrials value from some sort of automated calculator. And it is a way to say, you know, strategically, if we're driving value and want to help our customers, then that fits into this strategy. It fits into this plan. So yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned the calculator. I want to fit that into as many conversations as we can.
Well, and it, you know, if we're talking acquisitions too, which is a pretty narrow marketing strategy by itself, you know, you're also not just talking about manufacturers, you're talking about brokers. You're talking about small business brokers and family offices and other people who play in the, you know, investment banking and M&A space.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a, you know, again, you don't want to do that for any old investment banker, but there are companies that specialize in manufacturing in those areas, in investment banking, in private equity, in family offices, you know, so again, all very specifically targeted, very far end of the spectrum for that.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, and finally, to wrap it all up, you know, we mentioned earlier that objectives have to be specific and measurable. I think everybody's heard or somewhere along the line, what is it, the SMART goals and SMART objectives? They have to be specific, measurable,
actionable.
Actionable, thank you. Time-based and realistic. Or realistic and time-based, if I'm making it SMART. And so if we want it to be a real SMART strategy, we have to be able to track it. We have to be able to know that we're doing it. We're making moves towards the success of it. I mean, you know, Nelson, a lot of people will just stop. They say, we have a plan. We're going to put stuff out there. We know what we're going to do. But then it stops there. I'm a big advocate. We had Matt, our analytics maven, on for a while ago, and we're going to have him back, but he would be rolling over in his non-grave if he was thinking we weren't talking about connecting the dots and actually bringing data and KPIs and things back to the table. Because again, I'll use the blog post example that I was calling out, but you are asked to write something. Why? What's it going to do? How do we know that it's doing what it's supposed to do? It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. How many, you know, is it improving your overall search rating? Mm-hmm. Is it drawing hits to your site? You know, what are those people do once they get to their site, your site? Are they looking around at other things? Are they filling out a form or a configurator or a tool? Are they just bouncing off the site right away? You know, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we mean. That's what we mean when we say KPI. And if you haven't heard us define it before, you'll hear me define it right now. A KPI is a key performance indicator. And all it means is a data point that matters to you. So if RFQ submissions matter and they're a good indicator that things are going in the right direction, then it can be a KPI. If you ranking on page one for a certain term, a sheet metal fabrication or whatever it may be, is important to your business and matters, then it's a key performance indicator. That's all that term means. So if you hear me and Nell say KPI, it just means a measurable, verifiable data point that is in fact important to your business.
Right. So, and from,
sorry, I just want to make that very, very
again, clear. Right. Well, Captain Obvious here again, from the broad to the specific, that the RFQs, you know, you may know that, okay, at least 20% of the people who ask for a quote are going to buy something mm-hmm. versus 2% of the website visitors are ever going to be a qualified lead. But you yep. know, the data shows you that for every 1,000 website visitors, you get a couple qualified leads. Why not draw more people to your website? You know, you can't say exactly how that works, but you know it works.
Well, and Lieutenant Logistics here, you need to be able to have the systems in place to track that. So if you know that website visits are important, then either have a Google Analytics or a HubSpot or a Accenture. There's a bunch of them out there that you can, smart metrics. There's a ton that you can just connect to your website and get data on how many people are coming, how many people are filling out forms. Google Analytics is free, super easy, but yes, you got to have the logistics. You got to have the tools and the pieces in place. And I'm not going to come here and say you have to use a specific tool, but you do need to use a tool. So if you're a big fan of Supermetrics, or you're a Google Analytics guy and or gal, and you've been certified and you're like, I Google all the way, great. But use it. Know it. Know those data points. Follow those KPIs. If it's important to your strategy, if it's a dollar value, if it's a number of machines you need to sell, if it's a number of meetings you need to schedule with potential acquisitions, whatever those KPIs are, know them, state them, and track them regularly. Because otherwise, your strategy is just something you did in a fun, you know, group session with your colleagues, and then you didn't get any benefit out of. And that's not what we're trying to do here. We're all about kumbaya and fun stuff. Hey, we're marketers, aren't we? We love to tell stories, but we're industrial marketers. So it matters, the numbers, the outcomes matter to Nels and I, as I'm sure they matter to you guys. That's my soapbox. Sorry, Nels.
There you go. Go Joey.
After that little outburst, I think we need to take a quick breather and probably walk on down to the shop floor. We need to put some of this stuff that we've been talking about into action. So, Nels, do you want to head down to the shop floor with
sure.
me and talk about this a little bit more?
Let's
All
do
right,
it.
Let's go. All right. Here we are on the shop floor. And this is where we actually put our metal to the money. We put our feet where our money is, all of those phrases that people say. We're actually talking about how to put this into action. So we've talked a lot about strategies and how people can incorporate them and make them work for themselves, what elements make up a good strategy, and how you can use specifics within those strategies. So now, for our homework today, I ask each of us to go find an example of where a manufacturer, someone that we didn't work with, has done something good strategically that we can then talk about. And so I have an example. I've asked you to bring an example. So share. Let's open up
sure.
story time and see what
and
you
for,
got.
And for people who want more specifics on this, it'll be in the show notes. If you go mm-hmm. on, you know, our Buzzsprout page for the podcast, it will have a link to this. My example is a small machining shop in Pennsylvania, Navitech Machining. They do precision component engineering for auto, medical, electronic, and even some aerospace.
Okay.
But they are a classic legacy company that relied on the owner's personal sales network to succeed, and they did for many years. Huh. Pandemic came. Business just, you know, as you might guess for that kind of situation, no more trade shows, no personal sales visits. They had a historically successful 46% lead conversion rate.
Wow.
But as things fell off the table, you might believe that so did their sales. So they decided to do basically nothing sexy, but they did a very fundamental investment in a customer relations management system. And they basically built up content on their website, attached it to a CRM, and they brought in a new business development manager, and she hit the ground running because she had data for the things they were doing. Right.
Wow.
It's not sexy. Right. But it's an investment where they had to get to the current world of digital marketing, and they were able to do so with very fundamental approach, built up the content on the website, came up with a distribution plan largely around SEO, paid media, and some blog posts, added a newsletter, and they basically were able to turn it around and build the customer base.
And that's awesome because it applies all of the different things we were talking about in that, in the first section. So they didn't just rely on one thing. They didn't just build some blogs and leave it at that. They didn't just set up social media, and all of the things that they did weren't working in disparate with each other. They all had a purpose and they were all pointing to the same types of things, which were, hey, here are helpful things that we have for you around our expertise.
It's a classic inbound marketing strategy. So we're going to improve our website. They weren't updating the website previously. They figured out how to update the website, how to provide new content, and then how to distribute it. And they were smart enough to not just do that, but to establish a tracking mechanism for it. So yes, was that a big investment for them? Yes. But it just goes to show you the fundamental strengths of inbound marketing for industrials, for manufacturing firms. You know, you got to have a customer focused website that talks about solutions and how you can help. Customer focused website.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny, my example is kind of similar to that. I found an electronic components distribution company. So there is RS Components. They're a large electronic product distribution company. So casings and all the things that go with all the electronic products everywhere. But they sell all over the world. So they're in a lot of different languages and they don't have a very good website. But one of the things that they did, because their big thing, because they're a distributor, is education. Like, why are these products the best? Why are these situations and strategy, or why do these situations call for these types of things? Here's how we can help. So what they ended up doing was creating a social hub of helpful content. So they didn't build it on their website because it's not the best and it's a global site. So there were a lot of elements they just didn't want to touch with that, but they built everything on social and they built it in 4 different languages, and they had it link to very specific educational and helpful content pieces throughout their websites and throughout their universe. So while their site wasn't the easiest to navigate, they were able to find a way to use a social hub and then things pointing to that hub as a way to very targetedly get people to the information that was helpful on their site. They also built a free tool generator. We talked about calculators, but this is like a free kind of tool planner that they had on their site that people could use. And so the design tool that they downloaded or they created was like more than 60,000 times than anything they had before. The new content hub gathered 45,000 members, and all within their first 12 months. So they saw so many new people. But what I loved about it was that strategically they were like, okay, we need to grow, but we need to grow by people understanding our products and reading and spending more time with us. So they created that content hub, very, very heavy content strategy play. But I loved how it all just layered back to, we have all this great content, we have all these great tools, but people can't get to them. So how can we make that easier? And they streamlined it and made it a lot more impressive, and saw some good numbers from it, which was, I also like.
So when you talk about a social content hub, what do you really mean? What does that translate for the way that most of us consume information?
You bet. And that's actually a good question. So Facebook is probably the easiest way to do this. LinkedIn will allow you to do this as well. LinkedIn does it via what they call a showcase page. So if you have a brand page on social, on LinkedIn, you can then build a showcase page, which is like a mini brand page within your company page. So you can show off a product or an article or a collection of things, if you will. Facebook will allow you to custom code and develop tabs. So if you're, when you're on Facebook, you see like home, info, hours, about, you can have custom tabs. And essentially that's what they did. They developed a custom
So tab you're hosting the content on
Facebook. And showed. And then it would link either to the direct PDF on their site or the place on their site that that information was housed.
Sure.
And then, you know, LinkedIn would have a showcase page. I don't know if they use LinkedIn, but that you could do that with a showcase page on LinkedIn as well.
Well, I've got a quick bonus if you want a bonus.
I was about to say, I only ask us to bring one. You brought a bonus, Nels? I want to hear it.
I don't want to make it sound like an overachiever, but this one was just like, oh, well, this is kind of cool. And this is not as industrial in that it's not there. There is a weird little consumer bent to it, but this is a company in, I believe it's in Massachusetts. It's called True Bounce. Okay. And they make basketball backboards.
I love it.
So they're trying to reach people who are going to put up basketball hoops. So you're talking about indoor or outdoor. And the cool thing about this product is they have a different material. You know, not we're not talking glass, right? We're not talking about optimal glass backboard for basketball. We're talking about they basically have a different material and they put holes in it to make it bounce more true than a metal backboard. And they basically figured out that they needed a little bit more awareness. And so they used social media to build up this True Bounce. So it's by raising the awareness among basketball players, they were able to reach the people who make decisions about community center gyms and playground, you know, the outdoor equipment. You know, this thing stands up to weather and everything else. So they basically, traditionally, if you were just trying to sell backboards to, you know, cities and community centers and parks and rec and all that, you wouldn't use social media, right? You're targeting very specific rec type people, but they were able to raise their awareness by using social media. So it was one of those things where in this case, they have a cool product. So they were able to, you know, believe it or not, the people who decide on what backboard you're going to buy for your playground are people who are interested in basketball. So,
well, that's the great thing about like, man, I love your bonus. I love your bonus example, Nels, because that's a very specific audience and social media being a part of, okay. So our strategy, our goal and objective is we need to get our basketball goals into the hands of these people. But that's a very specific group of people. There's not just like, you know, Gym Owners Monthly, you know, magazine going around. Maybe there is. I've never seen it.
I don't know.
But,
right.
But what you can do is you can use social media to target a niche segment easier than almost any other channel outside of like maybe a programmatic buy or a specific newsletter.
Which is going to be way more expensive. Right. Programmatic is going to be way more expensive than social in this case.
And
right.
So I love that they have a very niche audience. They know their strategy needs to be focused heavily on finding a specific target and a specific type of person. And how do they do that with the budget they have? Social. And then they're using social to get people's attention and then dragging them back to other content or other ways to convert. And that's strategically thinking through the logistics. And I love it.
People searching for terms like gymnasiums and basketball hoops, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not a lot of people probably search for basketball hoops, but in this case it worked.
Either dads in cul-de-sacs or people who need to build industrial gymnasiums.
Yeah.
Oh, this was great. Sorry everybody for tricking you at the beginning of this episode, but this has been such a fun conversation to dive in on what makes an industrial marketing strategy successful. Not a dozen different strategies, but the DNA and the building blocks that allow you to customize a strategy that will be successful. Nels, did you feel good about what we talked about today?
Yeah. Yeah. It comes back to basics, right?
Yep.
The KPIs, you know, what are you really trying to accomplish? And then, you know, how do you tweak what you're doing to get the best possible results? But yeah, it's no surprise, right? Captain Obvious signing off here. You know, you're aligning it with your goals and objectives.
And Lieutenant Logistics following up here, sir. Connect it to your tools and make sure you're getting the right data. Yes, sir. This is awesome. Nels, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. And listeners, industrial marketers of the world who are listening, it is a pleasure to get to talk to you about this. If you have questions, shoot us out on social media. If you're following us, make sure that you are Industrial Marketer. You can find us on any of the networks that you're in. Make sure that you subscribe to the show. Make sure that you are listening when new episodes come out. And if you want more information about the industrial marketing world and tactics and tools and reviews, go to the website, industrialmarketer.com. There's more stuff than me and Nels could ever talk about that exists on that site to help you guys out. We live this every day, and we know that you guys do too. So until next time, we can't wait to hear how your industrial marketing is going, and we will keep bringing you our insights along the way. Have a wonderful day, and until next time, bye.